Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Canucks Central is for Ensign Pacific, Vancouver's premier Chrysler, Dodge, Ram, and Jeep superstore on 2nd Avenue between Cambie and Main, or at ensignpacificchrysler.ca. Oh boy, that was a night. Sat, that was incredible. I mean, I know we love playoff hockey. We're hockey fans first and foremost, more than anything else. And playoff hockey is another level. That atmosphere, that building last night, that third period, the back-to-back goals, my ears were ringing after Joshua scored the go-ahead goal. What was it, 12, 13 seconds after the Canucks had officially tied it? It was crazy.
I'm not sure I heard anything you said because I'm still deaf from last night. I can't even comprehend how loud it was.
I can actually hear you as we discuss things on the show here today.
Yeah, my ears were like ringing this morning, and I'm not even sure I slept. I mean, by the time I got home last night, it was 1 a.m., and by the time I fell asleep, it was like after 3, and I got up by like whatever time I woke up, and I'm like, I don't know if I slept last night.
Yeah.
But it was one of the most... I'd say intense, jubilant, crazy atmospheres I've been a part of as far as playoff hockey goes, especially in the first round of a playoff series.
Yeah.
Like the only thing that kind of beats that would have been the uproar that happened when Alex Burrow slayed the Dragon in Game 7 against the Chicago Blackhawks in terms of how loud the building had been in the first round.
It was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before, and that's saying something. The crowd was on another level. Being in the room last night, you could tell that the players were stunned still at the atmosphere that they had just experienced. JT Miller, most notably, guys still talking about it today. You know, the longest tenured Canuck, Brock Besser, today saying it lived up to the hype.
Yeah.
So it's... You know, as a fan, I'm sure that's lovely to hear, right? That you feel you did have an impact on the game. And, you know, I tend to think, and you look at playoff records over the last 10 or so years before this season, home ice advantage hasn't really been a thing in the NHL playoffs.
No, it's like 50-50. It's a coin flip. It's like maybe 51%.
Yeah.
Right?
So
like it's not a lot.
I do often think that home ice advantage, the home crowd, the sixth man, whatever you want to call it, it is overstated and maybe overrated at times, but it was hard to... not be in that place last night, to be in Rogers Arena and not feel as though the crowd had an effect on the way the game flipped as quickly as it did, right?
Yeah.
You know, they score the goal, then they score another one back-to-back, and then the way they close out the rest of the game all felt like the crowd certainly had a part in that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm just like smiling, thinking about like how last night just like completely unfolded and how the players felt. Like you mentioned all the guys and what they said about the atmosphere, and Ian Cole was on with us post game, and he just couldn't. I mean, this is a guy who's won Stanley Cups. He's gone deep. He's done all sorts of different things, and he's talking about how teammates of his had tears in their eyes during warm-ups and everything, right? So the level of emotion in the game last night was really palpable, and you just kind of realize how starved the market's been. You know, and a lot of fans were saying like they've been beaten down by the Benning years, beaten down by the team being having as many struggles and it looking bleak. And a lot of people were not convinced they could make it happen with Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes. And not to say that game one means you winning the first round, let alone going deep in the playoffs or anything. But it's more about last night was kind of a realization of how long it's been. And this team's pretty good. And it's a lot of fun right now to be here and enjoying this moment.
All right. Let's get to it. It's the Open on Canucks Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Oh! That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the Canucks taking game one over the Nashville Predators decided to have a optional skate today. 9 skaters, 2 goalies on the ice. There was Casey DeSmith and Artur Shilov's on the ice for Vancouver, so no Thatcher Demko. He did not speak with the media last night either as he was getting treatment. So Demko just getting ready for game two, as is the rest of the group. As Tockett mentioned today, a lot of the players were spent after the victory last night, didn't want to force guys onto the ice for practice, so they had the optional skate, and we'll see if that was the right play or not when they get it going tomorrow. And I'm not at a point, Sat, where I really doubt how this team prepares itself anymore. I know that was a big question mark for a long time with this core group of players, or most of this core group of players, the same core pretty much minus Bo Horvat now. But their preparation, their starts to game were always in question. Was not a problem last night. And when I think about preparation and a common question, a common theme when a team turns around a game in a third period in the way that the Canucks did last night, what was said in between the second and third period that got the guys going and that rallied the troops to get the comeback in order? And that's kind of like movie stuff, right? Yeah. Like you think of Al Pacino in Any Given Sunday, or even Billy Bob Thornton maybe in Friday Night Lights. But it doesn't really work that way in real life. There's often maybe a thing or two said by the coach, some tweaks, some things they got to be sharper on. But what stood out to me talking to the guys and being in the room was no panic. We've done this all year long. We know what we need to do in order to get this thing happening. We don't need to force anything. We've still got time. We're only down a goal. We don't have to push. We don't have to get out of position, go above and beyond to try and make something happen. We're getting opportunities. Eventually, we'll find a breakthrough, and that stick-to-itiveness, a word that Ian Cole used with us in Victoria back in training camp, I think more than anything is what allowed them to be in the right mindset to turn that game and not, you know, try to do too much in trying to come back over the Nashville Predators.
They showed a lot of resilience, and they've shown to be a resilient team over the course of this season. They've had some challenges, but they've bounced back. They've done a really good job of rectifying things. And I thought their biggest issue in the first period was honestly just being too amped.
Yeah.
You know, and the players talked about that too. You were in the room, you know, like how you know, they were mentioning that they weren't even looking at the puck. They were just chasing this and hitting guys. And when they had the puck, it wasn't so much they were forcing things, but they were almost like too amped up to make the right play. There's so many passes that were going into teammates' skates. The Canucks had like two or three odd man breaks. No, three odd man breaks in the first period. Two of them were like three-on-ones and a three-on-two.
Yeah.
And both of them kind of died because of bad passes into the skate. Now, Myers actually got a shot off from the Lafferty one, and Saros made a glove save on it. But the one where Joshua tried to feed Garland, it was in his skates. He fell over. He couldn't do anything with it. To me, that was just too much energy.
Lindholm one, it's at the heel of his stick.
Yeah.
In between his leading skate and the heel of his stick, he's just like trying to get his stick on it, but he can't do it.
Yeah, and a lot of that to me was just way too much energy, way too much hype in their game. And once that settled down, they really grew into the game. And the only thing that kind of got in their way was with the run of penalties they took in that second period.
And the penalty kill actually fueled, you know, them to gaining some momentum. Even Andrew Brunette talked about it after the game, how the power play killed some of their momentum because they weren't able to get too many chances after the Ryan O'Reilly goal. So, you know, the Canucks, their ability to stick to it, the maturity they showed, the patience that they showed in the game, I think is huge, because there's a world where you let that game sort of get away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, maybe, and I thought the Canucks were going to challenge the O'Reilly goal, but again, the dumbest thing in sports is that you get penalized for challenging what is essentially a 50-50 call because you want to make sure that the refs got it right. But in the NHL, you get penalized pretty heavily for that, right? It's not like a timeout's taken away. You got to go back on the penalty kill, plus the goal counts. I mean, that's just, it's like it's like double jeopardy, you know?
Yeah.
Like you don't get charged for the same thing twice. This is unfair.
No, yeah, I get it, but at the same time, the fact that he's shown the resilience, I mean, he's shown the discipline Talk it has, and their video guys to be able to say no. And there's been a couple times where there have been 50-50s, and we wondered, should they have challenged it or not? And they didn't challenge it. And then you look at it closer, you're like, okay, they probably would have lost that challenge. Especially when you remove the emotion out of the moment, out of it. I actually think if they would have challenged, they would have lost it. Because the more I watched that play, the puck looked to be past the glove already by the time Evangelista made contact with Demko's glove.
It's completely up to, I guess, Toronto's discretion in that moment.
Yeah, and honestly, like if the puck is somewhat behind the glove, they're probably going to side with the call on the ice, yes, which was a good goal, right? So I think they would have lost that challenge, and that probably helped them out, not giving up a penalty right after giving up a goal, right? So I thought it worked out in Vancouver's favor, not challenging in the moment.
But even on the players, again, you know, the patience, the stick-to-itiveness, you know, that could be a moment where, as a player, maybe if you're Demko, you're like, man, they didn't challenge that. The guy very obviously hit my glove or whatever, but there was no sag in the Canucks game is essentially what I'm saying. It's just like, all right, let's just get back to the game plan, and we'll make up this deficit. And that's the kind of mindset that eluded this team for so many years, and I think it will help them, because not only do they have, like, they've got the better team in this series, they know, like, they seem to know that, right? They're pretty confident in what they're able to do, and it just simply comes down to execution for them. And the third period is where execution ultimately took over, because, you know, they have the great big chance from JT Miller early to tie the game. He misses the net, but they stick to it. They get the next goal, and then from there on, it's all about execution. The next shift, the forecheck, the way they close out the game, all of it comes down to this team and how they go about executing their game plan. And as long as they do that, like, that's what game one showed to me. As long as they execute their game plan and execute what they want to be as a team, they're over the best of seven, they're going to have more success than Nashville.
And I think Tockett's playing it really well. So today he was talking about how there isn't really much else we can learn about them. They can't really learn anything. We all know. We know who we are. They know who they are. And it really comes down to us being us. And he also mentioned yesterday, I think it was, that him and the coaching staff have been on the guys the past month about, hey, the playoffs are coming around. You guys have to be better. Details have to sharpen up again. You have to find your game again. You can't just ramp up in the postseason. But he said, after all that pressure, now I'm building these guys up now. It's about imparting the confidence. There's not much you can do at this stage. Sure, there are adjustments you make in-game, some here and there, but you're not changing your identity.
No, you are who you are.
You are, exactly. And at this stage, you can't really change too much about who you are. So the best thing you can do is give everyone confidence in believing that who you are is good enough, as long as you bring it every night. And if they bring the effort on Tuesday, they should be in full control of this series. And I think that's what you're hoping for now, right? Like, last night was what an incredible, beautiful moment for Canucks fans, right? And I see Gary Garrison saying, I'm seeing people talking hate about the Canucks now. What did I miss? Who's hating on us for celebrating so hard? If people are getting mad at you for celebrating, you're winning.
Yeah.
Don't even bother. Like, hey, if you want to have fun and go back and forth and you like the banter, have at it, right? If you're getting upset about it, ignore it. They want to make you upset because you're winning. You're happy. People don't want to see you happy. Stay happy. Don't listen to haters who don't know what they're talking about. And they're talking about why you're celebrating so hard after winning the first game. They're not Canucks fans. They haven't been through the decade you've been through. Enjoy the moment and don't give a you know what about what anybody outside of this market is saying about, are you guys having too much fun? If they're mad at you for winning, they're losers. All right. That's all I got to say about it. But you have to take advantage of what you had tonight.
Yeah.
Last night. You won that game. You came back. Take care of business in game two. All the things you said are right, but do they actually have the true maturity to do it in the second game? And like Talk had mentioned today, matching that emotional level is not easy, and they have to do it on Tuesday.
This text, if the Canucks don't win game two, how much of a failure would that be after stealing game one in the third? I don't know if I would. And look, okay, they overturned a third period deficit, so I get where that sentiment comes, but when you say stole a game, it makes it feel like the Canucks were played off the ice and didn't have any business winning that game. And I really don't feel like that's how that game played out last night.
The Canucks can be better.
Yes.
But they were the better team last night.
Yeah.
And they fully deserved to win that hockey game.
That's the way I felt about it. And it's, some things can be better, right? Execution can be a little bit better. You know, I've talked to, when we talked to Rick Tocchet again today, it was, you know, being better in the, with your edge, your face-off edge draws. And
those are good questions by you today.
Yes. Reece. Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, there's multiple moments, you know, Nashville had a goal right off of a face-off. So there's definitely a focus there with some of the things Nashville does off of their face-offs, a lot of set plays that they run coming out of draws. And of course, the way that they deal with Nashville's breakout, I think, is something that they can be better with. Because when they did execute that well, their forecheck in the third period, you know, there was really only one team on the ice. And so that's another big key for the Canucks to continue with. But I know a lot of people are having this same sentiment, and I wouldn't sit here and say that I was in love with Pettersson's game last night. You know, Miller had a great game. Lindholm had a great game. Did Elias Pettersson have a great game? No. Do I think he was awful? No. But it's the same thing we've talked about all year. The ceiling of this team, it will ride or die with number 40. And he's got to find that next level at some point if they're going to go on a long, healthy playoff run. Can they win this series over Nashville with Pettersson playing as he is right now? Yes, absolutely. I think they can. I think last night showed that as well. But they're going to need him to find it at some point. That's very much apparent to pretty much everybody. The only thing I really didn't like about Pettersson's game was on a couple of moments, couple of plays, it seemed like he was trying to force something and he threw pucks into the middle of the ice into rather like maybe dangerous areas. Didn't end up in anything bad happening to the Canucks, but just uncharacteristic to see Pettersson have a couple of moments where he is maybe careless is too harsh of a word, but you know, not managing the puck well.
It rushed a couple plays.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's something that the coach mentioned today too was he kind of felt like that line abandoned the game plan a couple times too easily. Hey, it didn't work the first time, so you abandon it and kind of go on your own a little bit. That happened a bit too much with that trio. But I agree. I think there were a couple plays he made. There was one play in particular where he threw the puck in the offensive zone into the middle of the ice, ends up, you know, getting out of the zone, and Nashville ends up getting an opportunity going the other way. But generally, I thought, like, he did a lot of good things as well. Like, again, like, he can be better. He needs to be better. If the Canucks are going to go far in the playoffs, he's got to be better than what he's been. No doubt. Like, nobody disputes that, right? But this notion that he was horrible, I just don't see it. Like, I rewatched the game twice. I rewatched the game once and rewatched it again to go through every one of his shifts to be like, okay, like, was he as bad as some people make him out to be? And I want to be fair. Like, yeah, we can criticize him for being as bad as people think he can be. But I actually thought a number of shifts, he keeps the puck alive, gets it deep, makes a play at the blue line, steals the puck in the defensive zone, transitions it through the neutral zone. A number of times he made plays that died on the stick of Lafferty and Hoglander. Didn't make the right read, had chances with the puck, they mishandled it. Those two guys, whether they were too amped up or whatever it was, really struggled with the puck, especially on the forecheck. And I counted five shifts where Pettersson made a play in the offensive zone that those guys couldn't come up with. Now, again, Pettersson had a couple of bad passes, like you mentioned. He had one turnover at the blue line, which led to a rush chance going the other way. He wasn't perfect. But it's hard to sustain pressure when your wingers don't come up with enough pucks.
Yeah.
And there were five shifts in particular where they had clear, good opportunities to do something with it, and they completely made a mess of it. That just can't continue.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Tocchet was mentioning today when he talked about answering your question. And he said, hey, you can't just look at the centermen. The wingers play a big part about getting offensive pressure, being good in your own zone. And I thought the wingers really struggled on that line last night.
Yeah, Hoglander, you know, you could feel it a little bit, maybe trying a little to do too much, and that can be a problem at times. Lafferty didn't even stick on the line for the whole game. So I think that tells you quite a bit. You know, coach even mentioned last night, Lafferty was the reason that first Nashville goal gets scored, or the main culprit, as his coverage. He's supposed to play in the center role after Pettersson gets kicked out of the draw. He doesn't do that. And so everybody's coverage gets a little bit mixed up, and that's why Jason Zucker was afforded so much time on that play.
And then a shot tips off Pettersson's blade too, right? So it's like a double whammy, you know. It wasn't great. But I thought in terms of him also creating scoring chances, so he had two grade-A scoring chances off his stick, 5-on-5, in the first period and didn't score. One was after Lafferty drew the penalty on the cross-checking call. He makes a great play at the blue line to keep the puck alive, goes to the front of the net, and then tries to jam it in on the side. Doesn't happen. The play whistles down, and the Canucks get the power play. The next great opportunity he had 5-on-5 in the first was late when he was playing on the Lotto line, and he got the puck on the near wall, and then he dragged the puck inside, shot it, but he missed the net, but just narrowly missed the net.
If he scores that goal, we're probably not talking about Pettersson in this same vein.
So it's not like he was completely like absent. Like that's I don't buy into that notion. And he had a couple of chances on the power play. The one shot he got off, that Soros, that almost jammed Soros, and he ended up, you know, squeezing it in, almost got by him. And then he had the one timer he just narrowly missed the net as well. So I mean, it's not like he was absent. Like this whole no-show notion, I just don't agree with.
Yeah, it's It's one of those things where we are so hyper-focused yes. on Elias Pettersson right now that you're noticing any small, any bad play, right? And there's, man, there's a million bad plays in a hockey game.
Yeah.
Pretty much every game from different players. And Pettersson, yeah, he had a few poor moments last night, but on the whole, was he all that bad? No, but none of his good moments really popped all that much. You know, the drag and shoot move was yeah. the one moment that popped, but it missed the net, so kind of goes away and you forget about it afterwards. Whereas, you know, Lindholm scores a goal. Miller has, I mean, he's hitting everything in sight. I thought Miller's, even his third period, like some of his puck management decisions where he's like taking a hit, doesn't have a play, so he throws it into a corner where it's like the absolute safest place to put it yeah. and make sure that, you know, it slows Nashville down. Like, just everything about Miller's game was just so on last
Man,
night.
Miller, on rewatch, he was the most hilarious player. He was trying to kill everything in sight. It was ridiculous, man. And like, he narrowly missed a couple of guys. He had one Sherwood he had lined
yeah.
up. And if he would have made contact with Sherwood, I'm just not sure if Sherwood would have been back in this series. He had a couple of moments, man. And he hit guys hard. I'm just not sure. Like, the vibe was just so crazy, but he just leveled guys. When he stood up Sherwood, open ice by the wall,
yeah,
Sherwood like made like a 360 spin falling to the ice. That's how hard he was hit.
So the Canucks had a lot of their big-time guys going. Can they get Pettersson to that next level? If they do, and in short order, this series could be rather short.
Yeah.
My other final takeaway from game one and something that has to be better over the course of the series is some of these missed opportunities that we talked about. Like, they had odd man rushes. They were able to, in spurts, take advantage of Nashville's aggressive play style and turn it back the other way for opportunities. But, I mean, you just got to be more, to borrow another soccer term, clinical in those moments.
Yeah, and they make some hole plays, Nashville yeah. does, right? They throw a lot of pucks up the middle, and the Canucks did a really good job.
They get guys blowing the zone to try and, like, really get a quick up going and getting a transition chance going the other way. And
the Canucks didn't really get burned on them. They did a good job of having a guy back. Hronek picked a couple off in the third. I thought they were really good at not giving Nashville yeah. anything once they took the lead in transition. But they also, you're right, got chances going the other way, too. And we mentioned the two really good ones in the first were 3-on-2 with Garland and Joshua and Lindholm, and also the Pettersson one with Pettersson, Lafferty, Hoglander, and Tyler Myers. And I mean, to me, Lafferty just makes a mess of that 3-on-1.
Yeah.
He's got Pettersson waiting for the one-timer, and then the guy he passes to is Tyler Myers, and the pass is in his skates. And honestly, considering how big Myers is and how awkward that pass was, he actually got a decent shot off, right?
He did.
And, you know, I think if the Canucks can play, you know, continue doing those things, they could have easier games than, like, to me, I'm not saying they're going to win this series 4-0. I picked the Canucks to win 5, right? But I'm not saying they're going to win this in 4-5 even. Who knows what's going to happen? We get predictions. That's what we do as part of our job. But now that it's here, who knows how it's going to unfold? But the pathway to making this a quick series is doubling up on the game and then getting Nashville to be more desperate. And then you start picking them off. And if that starts happening, you can make quick work out of a couple of games. That's your best pathway to making this a quick series.
Quickly on the Canucks Central Roundup, game 2 tomorrow against Nashville, obviously. All the games are against Nashville from here until the end of this series. Canucks did have a very optional skate, as mentioned earlier, just 9 skaters on the ice, 2 goaltenders, none of which were Thatcher Demko. I know some are texting in and asking about Pod Colson. Why didn't he play? And saying, no offense, Reach, but your boy Phil DiGiuseppe looked out of place. He should be in the press box. From what I could tell, I mean, look, it was an optional skate, so there's nothing to really to read into yet as far as practice goes and potentially any lineup decisions for the Vancouver Canucks. But I wouldn't be surprised if Pod Colson gets in at some point in the series.
Yeah.
That's all I'd say.
I wouldn't be surprised either. Talk had essentially said early in the series he's relying on some more veteran guys,
yeah.
a little bit guys with a bit more experience, but he is going to go to those guys. The question is, would that be in game 2?
We'll find out more tomorrow when the Canucks get in a morning skate ahead of game 2 with the Nashville Predators. Lots more still to come. It's Dan Riccio, Sat TR Shaw. Don Taylor will join us next on Canucks Central.